Welcome to AM Best Audio.
For AM Best Audio, I'm William Borden. Joining us today is Eugenio Gonzalez, insurance leader at Plug and Play. Eugenio, what kinds of trends are you seeing regarding insurance and innovation?
Let's talk a little bit about what we're seeing. We just hosted here in Silicon Valley our selection week where we bring together some of our biggest partners within fintech, insurtech, enterprise, and healthcare all together to see what we believe are 40 plus of the top-notch companies that are coming around the corner. In terms of trends, I think what we are starting to see more and more interest out of our partners is, one, startups that are leveraging open source models. And this is really interesting because we've been on this journey for a few years now around generative AI, and most of the companies that our partners are dealing with have closed source models. And we're starting to see this shift towards open source where companies, and not exactly like the hedge fund that released DeepSeek, but models like DeepSeek that are open source are freely available for companies there to fine tune them and work alongside with them are becoming really, really popular. I think everyone had this seismic shift where they realized, oh my God, there's this Chinese company releasing state-of-the-art technology as open source. What does that mean for US technology? What does that mean for all of this AI efforts that we have? And so far, the reception has been incredibly positive. I think on the cost side, obviously, open source models are freely available. You just incur maintenance costs. You have much more transparency and explainability. The support of a wide community to help it iterate much faster also builds up to having usually more resilience when it comes to security. You get to control your own IP. It's customizable. You get to leverage all your proprietary information to better train these models. I think the only drawback is the time to market, which most partners are starting to realize that even if it's easier to use an out-of-the-box model, like the ones that big companies such as OpenAI or Anthropic or all these other folks can provide you, the benefits of open source vastly outweigh the nuisance of having to deal with the fine-tuning process, right? And I think that's where we're starting to see companies like Omi, for instance, that just launched. It's an open source lab that's helping large companies fine-tune their large language models with their proprietary data are becoming more and more interesting. We're seeing companies like, for instance, Omelet, are using open telemetry native processes, this protocols to bring down the skyrocketing costs around observability that most of our insurance partners have. So being able to leverage all these open source models in a nutshell is, I would say, one of the biggest trends that we're seeing right now.
As far as if you're an insurer looking to use these open source platforms, what's the beyond cost, what could possibly be the net benefit for an insurer that's using this kind of platform versus using a closed source platform that's being driven by some of the big tech incumbents?
Yeah. So a big issue of what we're seeing right now is that companies are preventing their employees to leverage, for instance, any site that ends with AI. The security has defaulted to the very low bar of just preventing your employees from accessing websites, right? ChatGPT is the number one most blocked website in corporate America. And then the second one, I believe, is Facebook, if my numbers are still correct. And I think that this has to do with the fact that most large companies don't want their employees to share proprietary data that gets pushed out through ChatGPT, for instance, and then the OpenAI gets to train their models on that information that's shared. Most folks also don't read the terms of services, right? So they don't know that only if you're leveraging the APIs, you get to retain the input. But when you're using ChatGPT, the input and the output gets, it becomes proprietary data for OpenAI to train their models on. Right. So that becomes a big issue. With open source, you have the advantage, some of which I already mentioned, but the transparency, right? Most companies, especially insurance companies, should be able to fully explain on the transparent and what the weights of the models are. And I think that this is a very, very unique problem where closed-end models don't really provide you with that sort of insight, right? You have absolute vendor lock-in. So if you're an insurance company and you want to use open source, you have the ability to pick and choose which models are the best ones and fine-tune them so that you're using one, for instance, on your sales and marketing side to provide generative AI to those teams, but you might want to fine-tune a different one for your underwriting teams, one for your claims adjusters or your claims management teams. This is the ability that open source provides that all the other folks don't, right? If you sign up with one, you're probably going to be locked into that one. So there's not only the customization, the IP issues, we talked a little bit about security. Those are, I think, a lot of the different benefits that open source provides where most of our partners are starting to realize, hey, there's something really, really cool here where it just takes a little bit of extra effort on the maintenance side and on the time to get this up and running. But the benefits of it, again, vastly outweigh the issues of having to deal with these open source models. Now, not every insurance partner of ours is there. I think that there's a lot of legwork that needs to be done before you get to that point with your IT teams to be able to leverage all these benefits. But that's where it becomes really cool in which companies are working at the frontier with these sort of models.
Eugenio, what are some of the other tech, I guess, tent posts that you see on the horizon here for some of the insurance companies to embrace or at least start to dance with rather than fully embrace, I guess?
Well, I think the bigger issue right now that a lot of people are debating based on the multiple conversations we had last week is, what is with these incredible models that you have now the ability to be able to get insights from a human PhD level person, right, using Google. So that's how powerful these models are, right? The founder and one of the co-founders and CEO of Anthropic says that you'll be able to have a country of geniuses in a data center at the fingertips of anyone, right? So it really becomes a question of, I have this company that all these team members that I work with, who are the ones that are going to get augmented? And on the flip side, when you start seeing the skyrocketing loss ratios of P&C carriers and how people are starting to think about what the expense ratios might look like and where we can potentially bring down some of these books of business to a more manageable combined ratio, maybe which are the positions that are probably going to get automated, right? And that's where it becomes really interesting about thinking, can I have access to 10x underwriters, right? So if you can effectively use AI to handle all of the structured, high volume and repetitive tasks that are within the property and casualty underwriting, for instance, and reducing all these manual workloads, standardizing the decision-making, that maybe you can really 10x the team that you have. But the more interesting question I find is, well, what happens next, right? In the next 3 years, what is a fully AI-enabled company look like? Like, what is the org chart of a carrier that has fully embraced AI, right? And then you have this sort of org structure where you have people there but are just dealing with AI agents, right? And why I think that this is super interesting is because we're seeing it in real time in Silicon Valley where companies are achieving $100 million, $200 million in annual recurring revenue in the span of 24 months with just a team of, let's say, 20 to 30 people, which was unheard of. The ability to be able to leverage technology to be producing so much more than you could before with a very nimble team, really, really is going to unlock this massive productivity gains that we haven't seen on the insurance side for a while.
Now, I know one of the attributes that Plug and Play brings is helping to develop innovation hubs to
customize your data experience. BestLink now offers an interactive company dashboard that provides company-level intelligence in a fast, user-friendly interface featuring interactive tables, charts, and Sparkline performance histories. Customize the dashboard tiles to prioritize the insurer ratings, data, and analytics that best support your workflow. AM Best. Our insight, your advantage.
Bring startups to essentially showcase some of their work to other potential partners in the insurance sector. Why is an innovation hub a good vehicle to connect insurance companies with tech firms?
That's a great question, Bill. Innovation hubs enable plug and play to bring Silicon Valley to everyone's backyard. And we're really grateful to be able to launch, for instance, one in New Jersey, where we have the incredible collaboration of different parties, such as the New Jersey government, the Stevens Institute of Technology, and Prudential, which is our insurance partner there. And by being able to bring together the public sector, the private sector, and the academia, it's much easier for folks to engage locally in solving a specific issue, right? Not everyone has the ability to fly over to, and spend time in Silicon Valley. Some partners and champions actually do, and that's great. But we want to make sure that specifically different business units, you can't just bring all your underwriters in and put them on a plane and bring them somewhere, right? It's much easier if we build a hub that has enough gravity pull to be able to attract the best and brightest entrepreneurs so that they can go and work with specific business units that are located. One pet project of ours is what we can do, for instance, in Des Moines, Iowa, where you have this massive cluster of talent on the insurance side. You have all these great companies like Principal, for instance. And what if you could bring all these opportunities down to a new area like Des Moines, Iowa? So that's what we're thinking, and that's sort of the cool things that we're planning on doing, hopefully, in the short term, not the long term.
So when it comes to these innovation hubs, what's the advantage of using this type of platform versus a more venture cap-driven option to try and showcase tech firms with insurers? Or, I mean, actually, if you're at a point where you're dealing with venture caps, you're probably looking for who your most natural customer is. But how about those that are focused on insurtech?
Yeah, so I think it boils down to incentives, right? So for the most part, if having a hub enables you to bring in an ecosystem of different players, when you're just, let's say, the CVC of a specific insurance company, most CVCs have incentives aligned with certain business units. Others are just solely financially driven. And then it really becomes an issue of how can those folks within the CVC cater to not just the needs of the portfolio that they're managing, right? Because maybe there's an opportunity where they miss a company or they invested in a competitor and it turns out that someone else is getting the most amount of traction. So by having an ecosystem of people, whether they're on the public private side or in the academia, you can make sure that you have the vastest amount of coverage to make sure that you are enabling your specific local business units to be able to see everything that's out there, right? Whereas with the venture capital firms or with CVCs, they mostly tend to care to just solely their portfolio because that's where their interests are. That's where they deploy capital. So I think that's one of the biggest advantages of having a hub over the other folks or players that are out there.
Now, is the idea for some of these innovation hubs also a potential investment payday from backing one of these startups at the hub? Like if you're a major insurer and you're really intrigued or enamored to the point where you're willing to put some money in to back these companies, are they looking for a payday if this kind of company eventually gets additional funding and maybe gets sold? Or is it something where they'll take it on themselves and look to improve their own efficiency just driven by this new technology that they're engaged with?
That's a good question. I think it depends. Every company is different. So to give you a sense, like why wouldn't a company want to reap the benefits of all the time and resources that they're putting behind a startup would, right? So let's say you're a large carrier, and you're devoting all these resources from the different teams that are assisting the entrepreneurs, why wouldn't you want to participate on the upside that your own company is creating in these new ventures, right? And at the same time, hedge some of the risks where they might go to a specific competitor or if they get acquired by a specific competitor, right? So I think in that sense, it makes a lot of sense, no pun intended, to be able to participate in the upside by channeling an investment into one of these companies. Now, not every single carrier, reinsurer, or broker, or data provider for that matter are structured that way. And some folks just don't want to do direct investments. Other folks believe that it's much better. Certainly some of the partners that we work with to be able to allocate capital into entities like Plug and Play, where we could become stewards of that capital and be able to cast our wide net, be able to see the trends in the market because of the ability that we have to connect all the dots between the different corporations that we work with. Let's take the insurtech vertical, where we have more than 60 carriers, insurers, data providers, and brokers. And then you can identify which ones are the winners of a specific market and put capital to work in those companies. You don't have to be enamored, or most folks make the mistake of just marrying the first company or startup that they're dating. But I think that over time, you start to realize and fine tune that eye of, this is a great team. This is an incredible technology. We can certainly help them scale and become something massive. That's the right one to do it. But if you don't have that ability to have seen multiple companies, multiple startups, multiple teams, you probably haven't had that ability to fine tune that eye, and you're just more likely to make a mistake on that front.
So, and you're kind of leading into the next question I have. Does it make sense for insurers to engage in pilot programs before fully engaging or embracing some of the technology that's being developed among these startups at innovation hubs?
The answer is absolutely yes, because imagine the risk of just not doing anything at all. Like, what if the companies don't change and then just something magical happens, right? The underlying risk is that you are going to become this sort of dinosaur and there's a meteor coming your way and you're not able to even do anything about it, right? And I feel like a lot of the companies that we work with have all these meetings about doing things, but the job is, I want to steal a quote that I heard the other day, but it's, the job is not to see the future, but to see the present very clearly. And I think it's pretty interesting because what better way to actually materialize that this very near present with the cool technologies that are happening and are all around us if you're not doing POCs, if you're not doing pilots, demos, and actually signing contracts with these startups and tech providers. That the biggest risk is missing out on all of this. And I think we're probably going to see a new wave of InsurTech 3.0. The AI-enabled companies are going to become the next wave of, you know, the Lemonades, Metro Miles, and Hippos that at some point terrified the large incumbents because they all thought they were going to get disrupted. And I feel like over time, they've become a little bit cozy, compliant, even maybe just because of their status as the incumbents, they feel like they cannot be disrupted. And I feel like the pendulum is starting to swing on the other direction where we're seeing, like I mentioned before, these incredible teams are super nimble, getting an incredible amount of traction in a very short amount of time. And then all of a sudden, overnight, you're going to start seeing this incumbents being disrupted by this new wave of AI insurtech-enabled companies.
Eugenio, I want to thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Bill. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you for listening. For AM Best Audio, I'm William Borden.
Looking to get the full attention of the insurance industry? We have the platforms that will do just that. Whether it be AM Best TV, AM Best Audio, Best Review Magazine, or Best Day. Find out more by calling AM Best Advertising Sales at 908-439-2200, extension 5399, and have a great day.